News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Hour two of the El Paso History Show has begun, and as often we do, it's the El Paso History Moment we start with, produced by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. And her story today is about President Huerta and one of his generals, lieutenant guys, colonel guys.
Colonel Roscoe.
And how they got busted in Newman, Texas.
Yeah.
Justice has served as another chapter of the Mexican Revolution comes to an end. It's June 1915, and ex-Mexican president Victoriano Huerta and General Pascual Orozco step off of the Southern Pacific train in Newman, New Mexico. Both are returning from New York in hopes of raising an army to reclaim the Mexican presidency. But U.S. federal agents are waiting for them, and they are arrested and charged with violation of U.S. neutrality laws and brought to El Paso. Orozco escapes house arrest only to be killed by Texas Rangers. Huerta is imprisoned at Fort Bliss, then secures his freedom, but never returns to Mexico. In 1916, Huerta dies a broken man. More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
Yes, you are. And so, that was an interesting discussion there. Those guys trying to get back in the United States coming through on a train, I guess.
Yeah, the train stopped in Newman, New Mexico, which is right on the border, and the military was there like, hello, little men, let's get in the car and go. So they took him. They took him both to Fort Bliss. Orozco escaped and was killed down by, I want to say, Fort Hancock. And then Huerta basically was locked up, house arrest at Fort Bliss, and then finally went home and was in El Paso and was under house arrest till he died, which wasn't much longer because he was an alcoholic. And his
That'll
liver gave
you.
Out.
That will kill you.
Yes.
All right, you do this for the History Alliance?
Yeah. Oh, I do. I forgot all about those people. Oh, my gosh. Want even more great information about El Paso and the region's history? Go to these Facebook pages, the El Paso History Alliance, a group of historians who promote the history and culture of El Paso through their Facebook page, which is a great source of historic pictures, stories, and preservation information, and is managed by Max Grossman and Mark Stone. And then the premier Facebook page on El Paso history is Remember in El Paso When, with thousands of pictures, stories, and much more. And it's managed by Barbara Given Bainey, who leads the great team of volunteer editors for the page.
Good old BGB. Well, she's got all kinds of things going on. Her administrators include Margaret D. Smith, Rick Duncan, Paul Louis, Ken Weiss, and Craig Hayes. These people all work there. They're all volunteers. They don't get paid. They don't get much recognition, which is why we do that here.
Yeah.
Hey, the name gets out there somehow.
Well, it's they're promoting our history. It's great.
They're not even listed on that page.
Yeah.
So we do what we can to help them out. Okay. All right, we got Bernie Sargent sitting here. Hey, Bernie.
Yes, sir.
Hey, dude.
Yes?
This Mexican Revolution thing, as we said in the first hour, we do this so many times and so intensely. We talk about the Mexican Revolution in El Paso, and people have actually called up and said, what are you doing to all this Mexican history?
Yeah.
It's our history because it happened here on this side of the border. And like we just said, that's Newman, Texas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to look at the whole scope of what the Mexican Revolution did. Let's describe a bit about 1914, 15 El Paso when the Mexican Revolution was cranked up. Because you had Villa wandering around. He was still friends with Pershing and started shooting each other yet. But he was living here off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were all kinds of intriguing things happening. You had reporters from all over the world trying to figure out what's the next angle on the revolution. They were here wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
You had a whole passel of German spies.
Oh, yeah.
And you had people all over the place involved in the revolution that otherwise wouldn't have been here by the hundreds. And so, like, the Sheldon Hotel apparently was a headquarters of all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that for a minute.
Well, there's a little bit of a story we've got later on with some pictures of the Sheldon Hotel and things that took place there at the Sheldon. It was a very popular place. It was very opulent. And the who's who of the journalists stayed there. That was their headquarters. I alluded to the fact that there was even an Italian mercenary that stayed there, Giuseppe Garibaldi. And he had obviously angered Pancho. And when he angered Pancho, Villa said, hey, I'm gonna make amends. So he literally went to Pancho's room. And when Mayor Kelly, Tom Kelly, was the mayor at the time, heard of it, he went with Pancho to try to calm him down. He didn't want that to take place in El Paso, much less in the Sheldon Hotel. And the story was that Giuseppe was in the bathtub when Villa burst in there. But Tom was able to calm him, and it didn't take place. That's just one of the little stories of intrigue that took place at the Sheldon. But it was popular. I mean, they would file their reports or stories to the newspapers worldwide from the Sheldon. Yeah, it was an interesting place.
Soldiers of Fortune looking to get involved.
Yeah.
And Villa would put him on his, I guess he had a payroll.
If you had expertise, he would definitely pay you.
Oh, you do dynamite? We need you.
Yeah, we need you, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bring a stick along. Let's go.
I want to do a show one time on the, I was trying to remember his name, the mercenary that was so well known. That was
Sam Drebin?
Yes, Sam Drebin. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Him and the other gentleman that was with him, an Irishman. Yeah. They were crazy. I mean, they were very interesting.
But that was a different El Paso than it would have been.
Yeah.
Had there been no revolution.
Oh, yeah.
So it greatly affected this city, mm-hmm. and that's why we talk about it so much.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to keep in mind that it was not long before that that they had actually established a federal office here for finances. And because there was so much money flowing out of Mexico and into Mexico through El Paso that we had one of the first
Federal Reserves
outside of the headquarters of the Federal Reserve because of the money that was coming through here. And so that was something that Villa and everyone else had their eyes on. Well, how do we get hold of some of that money?
How many banks can a robin one day and get away with it?
And that's still true today. The amount of money that flows through this Federal Reserve office in El Paso is an amazing amount. I mean, it's billions of dollars come through mm-hmm. the trade and logistics. And it's amazing. With the maquilas.
With the maquilas, it's incredible.
What's your next picture here?
La Patria? La Patria, yes. That's interesting. It was a newspaper. It was a Mexican language newspaper that was published just for a couple of years from 1919 to 1924. And it's down at 317 South El Paso Street. And the gentleman that put that together was Silvestre Terrazas. Excuse me. Terrazas. Yeah, I'll get it. And he was pretty well known. Initially, he was kind of a sympathizer of the leadership of Mexico on the federality side. He supported Diaz. But then he wrote an editorial that was kind of negative, and they went looking for him. Now, he came from a very wealthy family in Chihuahua. And so he decided, I've got to get out of Mexico. So he came to the United States. And he worked a little bit here writing newspapers, articles, trying to solicit support for for the revolutionaries. He changed sides because he saw what kind of a person Diaz was. Now, even though Terrazas came from a wealthy family in Chihuahua, he saw some of the injustices that were taking place. So he abdicated and came back across the border, and he set up that newspaper down on South El Paso Street. It was a very interesting time, and he published a newspaper, and it went everywhere. I mean, it was just very, very outspoken. Now, the revolution per se had kind of wound down, but there was another movement taking place in Mexico starting about 1920, and that was the Cristeros.
Oh.
There was persecution of the Catholic priests and Catholics in Mexico. So
why did they do that?
They felt that the Catholic Church had too much power. That was something that's been in existence since Catholicism started. You know, they get a lot of power, and all of a sudden, the governments, if they can't control them, they eliminate them, or they try to. And that's pretty much what the Cristeros War was all about. And it's interesting stories about things that I've learned about that war, too, but that's a different subject for another time.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that someday.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got here?
Next up, I think, is the Hotel Orizaba.
Orizaba.
Yeah. Interesting. The lot of intrigue there, too, because it was not as high-end as the Sheldon. So you had a lot of the lower-level people there, the newspaper aspiring journalists who were trying to make a name for themselves. They would stay there. They would write their copy from that particular hotel.
They used pencils. The other guys had pens.
Yeah,
it was a big
step down. They could
afford
the telephones. But, this one here. So I put that up because it was kind of interesting, and that's what it looks like today. So it's been restored. It's been maintained, which we're really happy to see, because that could have been wasted away too. And that's now on the bottom floor. It's merchandise, mercantile, which was back in the day. But the top floor was all about hotel.
Doesn't that have some additional history to it? Is this the one that had the museum in it for Teresita Urrea?
Yeah, I think it did for a short period of time.
Yes. I mean, because she was a big deal, too.
Oh, she was a really big deal.
She was not part of the revolution.
No.
I don't remember her exact time frame.
But she traveled around the world.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, that was another situation where the government got very nervous about someone who, quote unquote, was religious and had spiritual powers.
You mean the governor of Mexico?
Yes.
She ran for her life, I think.
They chased her out of Mexico.
And that's about a block from the border.
Yeah, and it's about a block and a half from where her apartment was.
Oh, boy.
Where she stayed. So it's a pretty fascinating history, but that's another subject.
That's another story someday.
Yeah, then it's a fascinating story.
It really is.
It should be a movie.
Yes.
It really should.
Because, I mean, she was real. It wasn't like you make this stuff up and, hey, let's look at this.
Well, here's a little tiny tidbit of the story. The federal government sent in a small contingent of military and priests. You know, although at the time they were nervous about the priests, they sent them in to debunk her healing powers. And the gentleman that was in charge of the military contingency had a large goiter on his neck. Well, she was in her house, where she lived, and he went in to talk to her to tell her that she was going to be under arrest. She had to leave. And as the story I heard goes, when he came out, the goiter was gone.
Ah.
Yeah.
Did he ask to be fixed?
No.
Ah.
He didn't believe
it. That was her. She would reach out and touch people literally in different ways.
Reach out.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a great story, and I think we should maybe talk about that sometime.
So there's a marker at that building?
Yeah.
All right.
At the Hotel Orizaba.
Orizaba. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Didn't Flipper also live there?
That's the other one.
Yeah, he did. He did room there for a period of time, too, after he was kicked out of the Army.
Yeah.
Under trumped-up charges, which was kind of a shame because he was one heck of a good soldier.
But he went on in spite of it. I mean, he worked on the Panama Canal and all media.
He learned Spanish, learned to read and write Spanish. He also worked for A.B. Fall for a period of time, gave him information about Mexico, what was going on. Yeah. So a heck of a guy, heck of a soldier. What do we have up next?
Another wrong in our history there. But we don't have to worry about that today. What do you got next?
Oop, that looks like... I don't have that.
Soldiers interviewing Mexican refugees at Fort Bliss.
Yeah, there was a period of time also during the revolution where, because of the situation in Mexico, we were actually incarcerating Mexicans. We were doing it because the feeling was that they could rise up here and create problems for the United States, more so than we were already experiencing. So they would incarcerate them at Fort Bliss. And there was a large contingency of soldiers and Mexican citizens from both factions, mainly from the revolutionaries. They were very nervous about what was going on. And so they would bring these guys and gals across, and then they would check them out. They would investigate, see what their background was. They didn't want these people to come over here and start smuggling stuff back into Mexico, which is another story about the Blue Whistler cannon that took place. We can talk about that later,
too. Blue Whistler.
Yeah,
the Blue Whistler. I knew you'd work that in there.
I got to get that
in here somehow.
One of my favorite stories.
He's written a book, so.
That's right, yeah. But that's what I'm really sharing there, are some of the incarceration facilities and what the people went through during the Mexican Revolution.
Where on Fort Bliss would this be? Do you have any idea physically?
Physically, I think it was out towards where Gray Army Air Base is.
Okay.
Because the air base wasn't really there then.
No, don't need it.
Yeah.
The B-52s hadn't been invented.
You mean Biggsfield?
Huh?
Is that what you thought was Biggsfield?
Biggs Army Air Base at the time.
Biggs, yeah, Gray. That's at Fort Hood. Sorry.
That's your hair.
I'm dating back to 1968. Yeah. The next one up, I think, is a picture of indicating downtown El Paso. And those red lines that you see are points of viewing of the Mexican Revolution, the Battle of Juarez. Some people contend that they didn't watch the battles from rooftops in El Paso. The longest line there is from the Hotel Paso del Norte, 10th floor, and I'll have a picture later on about that. And then the bottom one is from the El Paso Laundry, where people would go stand on the roof of the laundry. And it wasn't advertised as a viewing spot. It was just something that people took advantage of the heights so that they could watch the goings-on across the river.
Okay, I got El Paso Laundry here.
Yeah, that's the next up.
Okay, and then, oh, I see it. Here they come, all these kind of pictures. Yeah, well, El Paso laundry was a big deal.
It was a real big deal.
Because you could get up there and maybe not get shot. Well, if they were aiming at you, they could probably shoot you.
I think that there's some bullet marks in the building itself from errant rounds, so to speak.
But that building is still there.
It's there, and there's a historical marker on that building. That was the second location for the El Paso Laundry. It was originally called the El Paso Steam Laundry, and it moved to that location because they needed, it was busy here, growing. Lots of,
dirty clothes. Dirty clothes everywhere.
There were lots of dirty laundry.
It was steamy, yes.
Yeah, so that just kind of gives you a picture of what it looked like in the day when they were standing on the rooftops watching the battles across the river.
And right behind there was the railroad tracks.
Yep.
With the people on top of the cars.
Yeah. In fact, we'll get to that earlier picture. That's very same railroad tracks, but further down the line.
Yeah, we got more pictures of that.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff here. We're talking about Bernie Sargent, about the Mexican Revolution historic markers in El Paso, Texas, and why they would be here. Because, again, a lot of people don't get the fact that the Mexican Revolution was a very large part of El Paso history, which is why we do this.
Mm-hmm.
It says right behind you there, Texas history begins in El Paso. Yeah. And that includes the Mexican Revolution.
That's right.
So there. All right, we've got a lot to go on here. Reminder about tonight, Concordia Cemetery, 6 p.m. gates open, 7 p.m., and you can go buy stuff on the tables.
That's right. We're going to have tickets giveaway. Oh, we're going to do a toast, a non-alcoholic toast, because we're in a county cemetery.
Of course.
So it'll be non-alcoholic. We will toast to Hardin's demise.
Fair enough. All right, we should be back in just a moment.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
That would be me. I'll tell you something here. On August 28th, our next show coming up here, there is an historic mural now owned by Westar Bank from 1957 called The Experiment. And it depicts agriculture in El Paso's Lower Valley. And the painter's family is going to come to town. They're flying in here from all over the place to rededicate the mural as it moves to the Bank of Fabens. Very interesting stuff there. And they got stories about El Paso, which is the other reason to talk to them. September the 4th, we hear from the board members of the Celebration of Our Mountains about their extensive list of tours and events for the fall of 2021. Jim Tolbert, Eric Kappas, and Paul Galvin are our guests.
Well, Celebration of Our Mountains has upcoming tours. I mean, it almost feels like fallout right now. And they're going to be touring the Chamizal National Memorial on Saturday, August 28th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. And you'll take a grounds tour and see where the boundary between the United States and Mexico once was before the historic agreement to exchange lands and fix the course of the Rio Grande through El Paso forever. Then enjoy the visits of the exhibits and the Chamizal National Memorial Museum, and this is an excellent field trip for anyone interested in learning about El Paso, Mexico, and the United States history. Then on September 4th, this one I'd like to go to, is at 1 p.m. for the first ever collaboration between Celebration of Our Mountains and the Old Sheepdog Brewery for the release of their Mount Franklin Amber.
Oh, the hiking people are go drinking.
I think I want to go there. It's the same day as our show, so... Says, we brought together our passion for outdoors and the Pueblo to create a brew that celebrates our mission to bring people together through outdoor educational opportunities and great-tasting beer. Sheepdog Brewery is located at 3900 Rosa Avenue off of Durazno near the Patriot Freeway Interchange. And now the complete fall program of events for Celebration of Our Mountains September through December is posted on their website. And you can check out the great field trips and make plans on how you and your family and friends can all attend. Call Jim Tolbert for more information at 915 525-7364, or you can email him at diegotolbert@gmail.com.
I love that. Call Diego. Okay, the next picture here, Bernie Sargent's in the house. We're talking about pictures we have that are on the Facebook feed. If you're just listening to radio, can't help you with that. The adjust your radio for television. No, don't. It doesn't work well.
Tune it in.
But we got the chance to do this, and Andrew talked me into it. By the way, Andrew J. Polk in there. He is the guy Monday through Friday who has a talk show called, well, Talk El Paso. Hey, how about that? Ding. Dingo, and he has a bell, too, so watch him. But anyway, 4 to 5 p.m., he's in charge of that hour during the weekdays. And it's an often lively, unusual discussion because you have politics local. He tries to focus on things of an international or whatever interest if needed. But it's a lot of local issues, a lot of state issues. And anything that affects El Paso is really part of the deal. And it's a call-in show, so you can hear all kinds of opinions as they roll by. And that's 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Okay, on the roof of the... this says the gardener. No, I don't think it's a garden. Oh, on the roof garden, I'm sorry, of the Hotel Paso. Well, I know there was a hotel gardener.
Yeah.
On the roof garden of Hotel Paso del Norte.
Yes.
That was a big deal. What's going on in that picture?
Well, you can see a whole bunch of people standing up there checking out the...
Next picture.
The battles going on across the border. And I wanted to show that picture as well as one of the original architectural renderings in the lower right-hand corner. And then what it looks like today in the lower left-hand corner. But we had the opportunity to go up there a couple of times and do some filming and do some interviews up there. And it was really kind of fun to go up and visualize what they might have seen looking across the skyline.
I want to know what it sounded like. Can you imagine that dimension?
Because that would have been bouncing off the mountains. You would have been hearing those cannons and the gunfire.
Yeah, it wasn't just gunfire, it was cannons.
Yeah, I mean, the boom.
Lots of cannons.
Rough sleeping.
Yeah, nobody's sleeping right now in El Paso.
Well, and think about people, though, that lived on this side of the border. And imagine, like, Sunset Heights. Yeah. Where they had these cannons and they're shooting. What was going to keep one from coming across the border?
I mean,
you know, accidents happen. So it would have been pretty scary.
That's a bizarre time in El Paso.
It was a very bizarre.
And didn't they have cannons, like, at Burgess House?
Yeah, they did. Well, they had the Blue Whistler. No, they had...
Oh, my God, darn it.
Long
the McGinty's
Tom,
had
the Long
that one.
Tom. McGinty's had one, yes. Yeah. There was cannons along the border. Yeah, they had points where they would make sure that they would keep track of it. And I think one of the things that this particular event in Mexico took, when it took place, it also lent credence to the fact that we needed a military post here. Although we had Fort Bliss, off and on, the Pentagon looked at it kind of with jaundiced eyes going, do we really need a military
post? Indian wars are done.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening.
Yeah, you know, yeah, whatever.
And, you know, we've got the border settled and everything, but, you know, was it?
Oh, well, look at this. I mean, you're seeing these guys up on top of this hotel, and you can go up there to that same spot today. Very interesting history there. We're on the El Paso History Radio Show. We shall return in a minute or two.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 14 Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
This week, go to El Paso Inc. and find the latest in El Paso business news. El Paso Business.
I know. It says El Paso's Business Journal. El Paso Inc. is available for you. Wait a minute. Is that right?
Yeah. For home or business delivery.
No. El Paso's Business Journal. El Paso Inc. is Wait, you said Business Journal, correct?
Doesn't matter. Keep moving.
All right. El Paso Inc. is available for home or business delivery. To receive El Paso Inc., order it online at elpasoinc.com.
Sunday night at 10:35 p.m., Saul Sines talks with border newsmakers about every event around the region he can think of.
Don't miss ABC 7 Extra this Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. only on ABC 7.
And it's an abridged version because we're pre-recorded today.
Yeah.
And we should be pre-recorded all the time. No, we probably shouldn't.
But we do
take live calls during the normal world.
Let's call someone.
We could call them.
We'll call them.
If these phones don't work out, I don't think. Anyway.
Call Pepe.
Talk to Bernie over here. Bernie Sarge is here.
Yes, sir.
And you're part of this clan over here on the other side. So you're part of the deal here of El Paso history. And what you guys do as a family, you promote and research El Paso history.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, it's great fun.
How'd you get this in your veins?
I'm often asked what drove me to this. Well, fortunately, I'm blessed that I have a wife that tolerates that. Because I do spend an awful lot of time doing research.
Yeah, but I like junking and antiquing, so I think it's a balance.
It's a balance, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, when we moved to El Paso, I always liked history. I just didn't like the way it was taught because it was too much, what cloud formations were in the sky at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when this event took place, as opposed to what was the event, who was involved, why were they involved, those kinds of things. Just the nuts and bolts of an event. So when I got to El Paso, I got introduced to Keystone Heritage Park, and became fascinated with the fact that we had history that dates back thousands of years, as opposed to just, what we're talking about today with the revolution. And not long after that, we went over to the Concordia Cemetery and went to one of the walk-through history days. And I thought, this is really kind of cool. Growing up a little boy in Pennsylvania, I always liked to play cowboy and stuff. And you don't see too many cowboys in Pennsylvania. But, I had the hop-along Cassidy pajamas and all that kind of stuff. And so I kind of liked that stuff. But when I saw what they were doing there, and I, more importantly, I learned who these people were that were, as Melissa says, it's the largest history book in the city of El Paso.
Oh, the cemetery itself.
Each stone, each person buried there has a story.
And a reminder tonight.
That's right.
That's right. We're going to have the event at Concordia Cemetery, the reenactment of the killing of John Wesley Hardin. Mm-hmm.
6 o'clock, be there.
Yep.
Yandell Street entrance.
Yeah, you bet. The fun thing about that story, too, is we were doing the practice yesterday. We were talking about the events that took place. And I put up a chronology of from April to August when Hardin was in town. That's how long he was here before he died of lead poisoning. And I talk about the people involved. Now, what happened to them after the fact? Selman was killed Easter Sunday a year later. And then the guy that shot him, George Scarborough, 4 years to the day, was killed in an ambush in New Mexico territory by some cattle rustlers.
Ah, so it goes.
Yeah. So anyway, the little sidebar stories. And then John Selman Jr., who kind of ignited the events that took place by arresting Beulah, he died in 1936 of a heart condition. So anyway, back to my thoughts of history.
Indeed.
There's stuff like that fascinates me. And I like to be able to tell those stories so that people, they can relate to it more. For instance, I alluded to the Blue Whistler. That's kind of a cool story. Now, how did it end up at Eastwood High School? And what was it?
That's a bizarre story.
It's a very bizarre story. And then where did it come from? And in fact, when I was doing the research on that particular piece of artillery, I found out where it was manufactured, Massachusetts. And then in looking at that, I found out that they originally were manufacturing blades for shearing cloth, cotton, and things, material like that. And it metamorphosed into making swords for the military. And ironically, they were located right next to the American armory. And so they had developed relations with the armory and the people that were supplying the armament to the military. And they got all their swords into the military. And then they thought, we could do other things, which developed. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff that fascinates me and trying to develop those stories. So they're legible. And then not only was the Blue Whistler cannon fascinating, but people around it, like, for instance, Diamond Dick St. Leon. He was a Texas Ranger, the last Texas Ranger killed in the last century. He is buried at Concordia Cemetery. Who was he? Well, I found out that a lot about him, but I found out that as he was growing up, he became enamored with a an attorney down in San Antonio by the name of Trevanion Teal. And Trevanion Teal, as it turned out, was an artillery officer later for the Confederacy. He's the one that took the cannon and buried it up in Albuquerque. He ultimately lived in El Paso for a period of time and got a divorce from his wife. Now, when they stole the cannon, another story, and the cannon was being retrofitted, it was taken to Teal's ex-wife's house to be restored. And so, you know, just these little tidbits of stories.
But was it in the Mexican Revolution?
Yes, it was.
What?
It was stolen St. Patrick's Day in 1911.
Oh, that's it.
And it was taken across the border after being restored and fixed up, smuggled across the border in three wagons down by just around the Clint area, and then taken into Mexico. And it was used all the way down into Mexico for about 4 months and then brought back to the United States to much fanfare. Ah. It was incredible. They had parades and everything celebrating that the cannon was back.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. Well, let's move on now to the Villa Stash House.
Interesting story.
Oh, my goodness.
Love this story.
The third house up from Paisano on Leon Street.
That's right.
Leon's only three blocks.
Yeah.
So if you start at Paisano and walk north, it'd be the third door on the left.
That's right.
And it's a sort of unassuming little building, but it was abandoned, neglected, however you want to say it. Mm-hmm. For so many decades, it never had legal plumbing, and it never had legal electricity.
Outhouse.
Well, it's got, well, yeah. It's
it had
got,
a privy.
It did, and it's now got legal plumbing and no outhouse. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go visit there, I think they're going to have it open more for tours at some point.
Yeah, they're talking about serving food and drinks. The little building next door, where the story is that some of Pancho Villa's officers would stay whenever he was over here in the United States before he couldn't come across the border with welcome arms.
But it's in Enrique Guayardo.
Yeah.
Enrique Guayardo is the owner, and he owns a gas station on the corner.
Yes.
So he's been looking at the neighborhood as something interesting to invest in. And he's from Mexico, and he's investing in El Paso history.
Yes, absolutely.
He is. And he's building a little house around the corner. It's going to be a bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a contractor, so it's lovely to see him get involved with El Paso.
And he's buying other little businesses up the street.
Yeah.
And so if you take a look at it, the pictures we have, it's a very interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
The marker on there has an interesting story about what was found there in November of 1915.
Right.
In that time frame, right after Villa got dumped by the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another piece of the dump. Because they raided the building, customs raided it.
Yes, they did.
Tell the details.
Well, what they did is there was a lot of activity there and got very suspect. And they kind of knew that there was a relationship with the people that owned the home. It was actually owned by a guy by the name of George Benton. He was the first general manager of the Paso del Norte Hotel, which kind of interesting side story. And his wife, let's just say George and his wife were Hipólito Villa's aunt and uncle.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So what they did is a few days before the raid took place, they went over and bought a huge safe and had it moved to the house. And all of a sudden, lights go on, and all this activity with cars coming and going all the time. The federal government, the United States federal government, said there's something going on here, and they went in and raided the place. And they came out with some people say as many as $30,000 worth of jewelry and $500,000 worth of cash from the safe.
In U.S. currency.
In U.S. currency.
And gold coins.
And gold coins,
yes. And jewelry.
Yes.
Lots of jewelry.
And, you know, that was one of the things that perhaps people feel led to Villa turning so nasty against Americans.
Oh, it's part of it. Because, once he realized Wilson dumped on him with the train moving the soldiers against his soldiers.
Yeah.
And outflanking his own people by 300 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, Villa could have won some battle maybe, except the U.S. government put all the Mexican soldiers in cars on the American side and rolled them right through El Paso, no doubt, on their way somewhere to Arizona and outflanked Villa's people.
Mm-hmm.
That was number one. Then this was number two.
Mm-hmm.
Number two being the stash house was raided, and that's why it's called Villa Stash House, because they found all this stuff in it.
Yeah. Now, the map you see on the right-hand side is a Sanford map, and that's from 1898 is the first time it showed up on the map. And I kind of outlined the building in blue so you can see that that's the building that's the first time it showed up on any maps. Enrique asked me if I could backtrack and find out when it was actually built, because some people thought it was built in the early 1880s or early 1890s. It actually wasn't until 1898.
Another interesting thing is Hipólito Villa.
Yeah.
He was a very interesting character in himself. I mean, he would be interesting to do a story on him also. I mean, he was into everything. He was kind of like Pancho's manager in some ways, handling his finances on the side of the border. But he was like, it's hard to explain, but he just was in so many different things also.
Very bizarre history in various places.
Yeah.
But this is in downtown El Paso. Mm-hmm. This is about three blocks from the convention center. Mm-hmm. It's a block, three doors off of Paisano. And it is a very interesting piece of our history. We'll talk more about this stuff in a minute.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We always like to talk about the McGoffin Home, a state historic site in El Paso, and there's only two of them. The other one's Waco Tanks. So the McGoffin Home is a state historic site. It's open by appointment. And they are, it depends on what's going on down there, because they had some water issues. Maybe they're over them, maybe not, but be sure to call. And you can get a hold of Gloria Garza, 1120 McGoffin Avenue. She's at 533-5147.
Well, Keystone Heritage Park tonight is having the Mystical
Madness.
Is it Mystical Madness? No, it's a Mystical Market. So sorry. Mystical Market that's going to be going on at Keystone Heritage Park. You're going to have vendors, entertainment, food, all kinds of great things. It'll ought to be fun, and it is a fundraiser also for Keystone Heritage Park. And we're located at 4200 Donovan Drive in the Upper Valley, and their phone number is 915-584-0563. Is that it?
And also, you've got you're conflicting with yourself, because you've also got Concordia
tonight. Oh, Concordia, yes. I know, same time. It's terrible. You get too many things going on at one time. But they're both great events, Concordia Cemetery. Come on out there to the reenactment, it's the annual meeting of the John Wesley Hardin Secret Society, and they're going to have a reenactment of John Wesley Hardin's last months in El Paso by Six Guns and Shady Ladies, mm-hmm. and it's a fundraiser for Concordia Cemetery, and come on out. It's from 6 p.m.
tonight
until 10:30 with a ghost tour.
Oh, yeah. Is that part of the deal? Once you buy a ticket?
You buy a ticket, you're getting both.
Tickets are $5, but bring a 20. Come on. These people need some help.
And $2 for kids. So.
Okay. Roma Hotel here.
Yeah. I've got a couple newspaper articles that I'm showing on this in the Roma Hotel. Luz Corral, Pancho Villa's wife, used to hold, let's just say she would have meetings there with people that were supporting the revolution. And a number of times the American military would go in there and they would arrest revolutionaries because they had crossed the line, so to speak. And the Roma was very popular for the revolutionaries to go stay. Sometimes they would take some of the wounded in there, and a number of occasions the United States government went in there and would arrest the wounded, take them to the hospital for treatment, and then incarcerate them at Fort Bliss.
What location is this?
Downtown. It's gone.
But I mean, it's on, it was on El Paso Street?
Yeah, no, it was on Paisano and El Paso Street, the corner there where the...
And what's there now?
It's a Carl's Jr., isn't it?
It's a Burger King.
A Burger King.
And so I heard Villa threw a guy down the stairs. A German agent came over to kind of lobby him about doing something with submarines or whatever.
Yeah, they wanted a submarine harbor on the Gulf Coast.
And so he just said, I'm not doing it, and threw him down the stairs.
Yeah.
That's a better treatment than he treated some people. shot him in the face.
Yeah. The next picture we have up there is the Sheldon. We talked about this earlier.
The Sheldon. This is good.
Yeah, with Tom Kelly and with Giuseppe Garibaldi. Giuseppe's on the lower right, Tom's on the lower left. And it shows a picture, a postcard actually, that I have of the Sheldon Hotel. And then to the left of that is Sheldon when it was on fire, burnt down 1929. But we talked about that story where Tom Kelly actually saved Giuseppe from being killed by Villa, because Villa was going up the stairs and he was going into that room and he was going to kill Garibaldi.
Oh, jeez.
Garibaldi is a descendant of an Italian. It pretty much was a revolutionary also in Italy, and was given credit for uniting the whole boot of Italy.
All right, what do you got next? That looks to be Shelton Payne Arms.
Ah, Sheldon Payne Arms.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was the second location of Sheldon Payne Arms. They actually had three. The first one was in the Mills Building. This was the second. And the third one was a building that was designed by the Trost and Trost, but ultimately was torn down in the 70s. This one here on the bottom floor of that hotel, St. Charles, was where they sold a lot of ammunition and so on. Now, Sheldon Payne were also blamed for supplying the revolutionaries armament by the American government, but they never really were able to prove it. In fact, Sheldon himself had to be escorted back to Phoenix, Arizona, to stand trial for breaking the neutrality laws, which they found later that he did not. They did sell weaponry, they did sell them legally, but the people they sold them to were nefarious and ultimately wanted to move that product across the border. But that was the second location for Sheldon Payne Arms.
That's been there for, that's an icon in that corner.
Yeah, it's been restored. It's a beautiful building.
Yeah,
really, really nice building.
All right, what do you got next?
What's up next? I'm sorry, which one?
Arms for El Paso seized at Douglas.
Yeah, we were talking about, I mentioned the fact that there was a lot of arms being smuggled into Mexico from El Paso. And these are some of the newspaper articles about that that took place. And it was a fallacy. I mean, obviously, there's probably people knew that they were selling arms that would not end up legally where they were supposed to be, because they were being sent, they were being shipped by the carload. And how many people would actually buy a carload of weapons? I think we go to the next page. We start talking about the elite confectionery.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of my favorite spots.
It's a traditional picture of Pancho.
Yeah. He loved ice cream, and that was one of his favorite places to go eat ice cream, was the elite confectionery. That was a second location for them also.
Any idea where the original photo is?
No, I have no idea.
I see this clean sometimes. I see it smudgy.
Yeah.
This one's pretty good.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. I think I got that one from the library. And if you go to the next page, you can see what the soda fountain looked like. It was a very ornate place. Whoops, that one there happens to show a military army dude walking across the street.
But that's the building.
That's the building right there.
That's Texas and what?
Mesa.
Mesa, okay. Yeah. But inside there, you can see the whole place without Pancho.
That's the, what do they call it, the $10,000 soda fountain. Very, very ornate, very, very neat. And if you go to the last page, we'll wrap it up with this one here. The last page shows an ad. They not only did they serve ice cream and confectionaries, but they also had entertainment. They had an orchestra that would perform on the second floor, the second level, and it was wide open, and a staircase going up to it. So they would advertise after a movie or after you go to church, stop by Elite, enjoy some music, and have some ice cream and confections.
There was no TV. You might as well come in here.
Well, that's what they did. I mean, I would love to have seen that place to still exist today. That would be a blast to be
in.
Can
you imagine you have to kick out all those CVS people?
Get your baseball ice cream, as they called it.
It's now a CVS store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a marker out on the side?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we put the marker out there also. That was kind
of
fun.
And part of the building still is very, they did the work down below.
It looks very
below,
similar
but, yeah.
to what it looked like, but not exactly like
no.
it. No.
But, they sort of kept it traditional?
Yeah. And I'll give them credit for doing that. At least they did that.
Oh, yeah.
They could have torn it down and gutted it.
Well, sure. I mean, a lot of people said, the heck with your history.
Yeah.
My headquarters is in Chicago. I don't care what you think. there goes your building. I mean, that is so stupid.
Yeah.
And even the locals who have headquarters here, they say, there goes your building. I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, none of that.
Newer's right. better.
Bernie, thanks for being here, for doing the history of a bunch of markers of the Mexican Revolution.
Only a few.
You got a bunch of them.
How many total in the city?
You said about 25.
25?
As far as the Mexican
No, all of the plaques. Oh, like
250.
Yeah.
All of them, yeah, but about 25 on that era specifically.
In that area.
And again, the reason we do this
is just to share, educate the people on the heritage and the culture of our community.
It's big on the Mexican Revolution.
That's right.
And we need to know that here in this town. And since nobody teaches our history here,
we will do
it. Tis the way it goes.
Yeah.
Melissa, shall we wrap this up?
Yes, we
Concordia,
shall.
Concordia, tonight,
That's
6
right.
o'clock.
Come hang out with
7
us.
7 o'clock performance.
I'll be there.
I'll be
working the bar.
Bring some money.
Yeah, I'll be dying to see you.
There's John Wesley right there. You get around, don't you?
I do.
Everybody else, and thank you, Andrew, in the control room.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
your help.
Andrew.
Everyone else, we'll see you next week here on the El Paso History Radio Show.